Welcome to Unit 5 of Component 2, The Culture of Healthcare. This lecture is an introduction to the unit topic, Evidence-Based Medicine. Evidence-Based Medicine, or EBM, can be defined as a set of tools and a disciplined approach to informing clinical decision-making. We apply the best scientific evidence available to various clinical questions. We learn to seek out the best evidence and how to use it appropriately, though we cannot forget the caveat that comes from a quote of Carl Sagan, obviously not applying to medicine, but being pertinent here, that absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. Not do we have to know what evidence is there, but what evidence is missing, and how that might influence our decision-making. Therefore, EBM allows clinical experience, or the art of medicine, to be integrated with the best science, making the medical literature more clinically applicable and relevant. So what's the big deal about evidence-based medicine? Why are we not evidence-based in everything that we do? There are some interesting writings from the popular press that talk about how humans arrive at decisions and how they apply evidence. Not just in medicine, at least in the case of one, but in everything we do. Keda has a book that describes 6 ways that humans come to false beliefs. 1 is that we tend to prefer stories over statistics. The 2nd is that we often seek to confirm and not to question our ideas. Another issue is that humans rarely appreciate the role of chance and coincidence in shaping events, although those exposed to EBM are hopefully a little better at that. Sometimes we misperceive what is going on in the world around us. Sometimes we oversimplify our thinking, and human memories are often inaccurate. We do not always remember things exactly as they occurred, especially over time. There is a growing advocacy for medicine being more evidence-based. One of the 6 attributes of the high-quality 21st century healthcare system in the Institute of Medicine, or IOM, Crossing the Atlantic Chasm report, was effectiveness, referring to the use of EBM principles. There have been other reports in this series, one in particular that talked about the learning healthcare system that learns from what we do. Naturally, the main way to learn from what we do is to collect data and analyze it, something that can be done without computer-based information systems. And then, this has given vision to the idea of having a better sense of what works in healthcare. Now, EBM has many methodological details and challenges. We will cover some of them in this unit. There are also more detailed descriptions of these challenges in a supplement to the journal Medical Care from 2007. This unit will explore the details of EBM, but it should be noted that there is some cultural pushback to this concept. Not everyone agrees with the completely experimentally oriented approach of EBM. There are other approaches for gaining knowledge, such as experience and observation. There are also some valid criticisms of EBM. EBM, in some sense, challenges physician-patient autonomy by having a very rigid view of what evidence is to be applied in decision-making for patient care. EBM tends to focus on large-scale randomized control trials that homogenize or take away individual differences. Finally, there are concerns about manipulation of clinical trial data and reports that do not undermine the principles of EBM, but show that in practice there are some shortcomings. One of the new foci of the EBM community is Comparative Effectiveness Research, or CER. Like health information technology, this achieved new, highly visible prominence through its funding in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, or ERA, also known as the Stimulus Bill. Completely aside from all the health information technology, IT, funding, the Stimulus Bill also allocated $1.1 billion for comparative effectiveness research. It was also touted, like health IT, as a down payment on healthcare reform. The money was allocated as $0.4 billion for the Secretary of Health and Human Services, $0.4 billion to the National Institutes of Health, and $0.3 billion to the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. There was also a stipulation that two reports be prepared by June 30, 2009, to inform the operational plan or comparative effectiveness research. These reports were published by their deadline, one by the Federal Coordinating Council for Comparative Effective Research and the other from the Institute of Medicine prioritizing research topics, which will be covered in the next slide. The Federal Coordinating Council was also tasked with developing a definition of comparative effectiveness research, and they came up with a draft definition that is on the recovery.gov website. Some key points are summarized here. CER is defined as research comparing different interventions and strategies to prevent, diagnose, treat, and monitor health conditions. The key aspect of comparative effective research is that it compares one approach versus another or a group of approaches rather than taking one study that compared something with a placebo and another study that compared something else with a placebo and trying to decide which is better. Beyond the research, CER must assess a comprehensive array of health-related outcomes for diverse patient populations. This refers not only to things like gender or ethnic diversity, but also patients who have chronic conditions or multiple conditions that interact with each other. And finally, one point relevant, especially to informatics, is that CER necessitates the development, expansion, and use of a variety of data sources and methods. In addition to clinical trials, this refers to mining databases of electronic health records using appropriate caveats and other sorts of things. The Federal Coordinating Council report called for emphasis not only on the research that needed to be done, but also on other aspects around it, such as human and scientific capital. This includes developing individuals with the expertise to do the research, scientific methodology to carry it out, data infrastructure to support it, including registries, data warehouses, and other electronic data sources, and then a mechanism to disseminate this research so it gets into the hands of decision makers, patients, clinicians, policymakers. The IOM report then prioritized 100 top research priorities that not only address the common diseases that require a lot of resources to treat, but also address issues around healthcare delivery and health disparities. In this unit, we will begin in the next lecture with definitions and applications of EBM. We will then look at the major questions, types of clinical questions that EBM tries to answer, questions about intervention, about diagnosis, about harm and prognosis. We will look at techniques for summarizing evidence, such as systematic reviews and medical analyses that bring multiple studies together to give us a more comprehensive picture. We will then look at some approaches to putting evidence into practice, in particular, clinical guidelines and decision analysis.